Did you know that inside your body right now is a medicine that can effectively treat over 100 so-called untreatable diseases? Inside each one of us is the most powerful medicine ever known to man. From the time that we are born, we all have what are called adult stem cells. I prefer a more accurate term, repair stem cells, because that is what they are, that is what they do, and that is what they keep doing. Great doctors from all over the world are now using repair stem cells to save and improve lives. Heart patients who were told to go home and die are now regularly jogging uphill. The symptoms of Parkinson's patients are being reduced. Blind children are slowly gaining some sight. Autistic children are taking a step back toward normalcy. Some paralyzed patients who were told that they would never walk again are walking again. And this is merely the beginning of the greatest medical science in the history of the world. I'm Don Margolis of the Repair Stem Cell Institute, and we want you to have all of the information about this amazing field of medical self-repair. This information could just save the life of someone you love. Hi, everybody. This is Don Margolis, Friday, August 16th, for our last regular one-hour show. Starting next week, on Friday the 23rd, we'll be doing a two-hour show. So let's get started with, we have a lot of things to put in here. We're going to start out with a simple definition between embryonic stem cells and repair stem cells. When you implant embryonic stem cells into a patient to treat a disease, that those stem cells have to be highly trained to do what you want them to do. And by highly trained, we mean educated to do the job. What happens then is if you got a really good embryonic doctor handling this, he will put the stem cells in the right place so they can treat the disease. We saw an excellent treatment of Parkinson's 3 years ago, which the embryonic stem cells did a heck of a job, but the lead doctor would not release the information because he knew there were possible problems. And what happened was within the next 10 days, each one of the animals who was treated contracted cancer. And that was that. And what we find out with embryonic stem cells, we see three negatives. One was the one we just mentioned. The second is the cost to do embryonic stem cells, to create embryonic stem cells, and to implant them is far, far greater than doing it for repair stem cells or adult stem cells. And the other thing which you never hear about or read about when you're reading about embryonic stem cells, and that's why we're here, is that a suppressive drug may be needed to prevent certain accidents from happening, like the cancer. So let's move now to repair stem cells, adult stem cells. They are quite simpler. As you know, embryonic stem cells are created for one purpose and one purpose only, and it's not to cure people of disease. It's to create a fetus and a baby. Repair stem cells have only one reason for being. That reason is to repair parts of the body that are in trouble. Dead tissue, replace dead tissue with live tissue, you use stem cells. So when an adult stem cell treatment is put into a patient, and let's take the heart, for example, the good doctors put the stem cells right into the myocardium, which is the sac which holds the heart, but they put them right next to the dead tissue that's in the heart they're trying to cure. And the myocardium sends the stem cells right to the diseased or dead heart muscle, and repairs them. Now, here we come to the difference. When an embryonic stem cell does its job the first time, it says, well, I've done that. What should I do now? What should I do now? And the answer is very simple. I should try to become a baby. But the repair stem cells, they know that their job is to get stronger and stronger, to create more and more of the, in this case, heart tissue cells, until they get enough of them to do a complete repair. Now, they don't always do that. They only do that about two-thirds of the time and do a complete repair of the damaged heart tissue. Meanwhile, the embryonic stems are over there looking to how to become a baby. Well, they're not in a womb. They're not even in fallopian tubes. They are usually in the brain. And when they're trying to say, I don't want to do this thing for this disease anymore, I want to become a baby, and I'm going to become a baby. So it starts to become a baby and eventually winds up as a tetranoma, which means cancer. And that's why you have never seen one embryonic stem cell, no matter how many liars there are, that tell you that they're the next miracle. The one company that was way out in the lead with embryonic stem cells, in the middle of their first clinical trial, quit and said, we're not going to do embryonic stem cells anymore. Now, the real reason is they cause cancer, but they gave three different lying reasons. Every 2 months they gave it. First one, we're out of money. Second one was some other baloney. And the third one was some other baloney. But they are not in the embryonic stem cell business anymore, and for darn good reason. That is the difference between repair stem cells and embryonic stem cells in a nutshell. The repair stem cells are like a small army battalion that goes to attack those dead tissues and keeps growing until they become a regiment, until they become a division, until they become an army, and then the heart gets repaired in most of the cases. Next, we're going to treat the president of one of the leading stem cell heart companies in the world. The name of the company is CellCare, and they're in the Dominican Republic. The head of the company is named Paul Schwartz. He's been in the stem cell business for about 5 years and is one of the most helpful persons we know and the most knowledgeable persons we know on the subject of placing stem cells properly into the heart. It's not a piece of cake. You don't throw them randomly in there. You got to put them in a certain way into a certain place. So let's call on Paul Schwartz and see if he can explain to us how to do it right, how to put the stem cells into the heart. Paul, one of the most important and crucial methodological questions refer to the optimum mechanism of cell delivery to the heart. Now, you and I both know when given intravenously, only a small fraction of the infused cells can reach the heart. Well, most get washed and diluted, and the lungs grab most of them because the lungs are the strongest organs. Our job, we know, is to bring the stem cells as close as possible to the heart and the dead, the region of the heart that's dead, and we hope to bring back to life. Would you give us your comments on this subject?
Sure, Don. Thank you. Well, as you mentioned, that the delivery of the stem cell is really, really an important factor when it comes to optimizing the health of the patient. And there are different methods of infusing the stem cells into the heart. One is an intracoronary application, and one is an endocardial application, and one is an epicardial application. And I'd like to discuss each one of those with you, Don.
Well, you can discuss them with us just as long as you define each one first so none of us, like me, get confused.
Absolutely. Well, as you mentioned, the IV treatment, although it's the easiest and the most gentle, does not allow the stem cells to infuse themselves to the infarct region of the heart. So we look to see what other methods of placing the stem cells in and around the heart could be effective. Our physicians at CellCare have been providing treatment to many, many patients, and they've got vast knowledge and experience in delivering stem cells. In fact, we can deliver stem cells to upwards of 80 different sites throughout the heart. the intracoronary application, the first one I mentioned, is the stem cell application when you go from within the coronary walls. So your cells are administered within the coronary walls using a balloon angioplasty method. It's very advantageous for tissue repair of the infarcted heart muscle. The cells are able to flow through the infarcted and peri-infarcted tissue during the immediate first passage of the post-ischemic region, so they're not washed away, as you mentioned before. To facilitate this, the cells are infused with a pressure injection, and they're placed with a balloon catheter into an area of the vessel that has infarct. The balloon is injected. The balloon is enlarged, and the needle runs through the balloon and injects the stem cells into the vessel at that time. So while the vessel is occluded, the cells are infused using this method. We can inject anywhere from 1 cc's up to 2.5 cc's per injection site. It doesn't seem like a lot. However, when you're starting off with tens of millions of mononuclear cells and they're distributed in those increments, they can go a long way. When we occlude the cells with the balloon, it prevents backflow. And it prevents the backflow of the cells and at the same time produces a stop flow beyond the site of the balloon inflation, which facilitates the migration of the cells into the infarcted zone. So thus, it prolongs the contact time that the cells have to contact and stick to the heart cells, to the vascular cells, excuse me, before, and they're not washed away immediately under these conditions. Did that explain that thoroughly?
Okay, I have a question.
Sure.
How does the doctor know, because everybody's heart is different and everybody's heart damage is different, how does the doctor know where to put the stem cells? Where in the heart to put the stem cells?
And that's a very good question. The stem cells are administered into predefined areas of the treatment. What the doctors do is perform a angioplasty, basically, and they go into the area of the heart and they look to see what's going on. They look to see where the occluded vessels are. They look to see where the damaged vessels are. They look to see where the infarcted tissue is. They compare test results from the patients prior to them arriving for treatment to what they're seeing live into the images that are in front of them. So they're placing the cells exactly where they're needed most, in the area of the heart that's needed them the most.
Okay. The term infarcted, I ought to explain that. Most of the time, when you get a disease, and let's call the most common one congestive heart failure, which means the following. The patient almost always had a previous heart attack, even if he knows it or doesn't know it. Most of them know it, of course. And that heart attack kept oxygen from arriving to the heart, and heart tissue dies when it is deprived for too long of oxygen, and too long could be 2 minutes. And the heart cells die. And if the oxygen doesn't start fast enough, the patient can lose a big chunk of his heart tissue, and it would die. And therefore, the heart, let's say he loses one-third of it, so two-thirds is all that's left. Now, like any other muscle, the heart has to work, now when it's only two-thirds of it, it has to work much harder to pump the blood around the body. And as any muscle that works hard gets bigger. And what happens is the cardiologist sees this heart muscle taking a picture, sees how big it's getting, he knows something is terribly wrong. So what happens after a good stem cell treatment is people always worry about what the ejection fraction is, and we know that the ejection fraction usually goes down somewhat, but not as much as some – it goes up somewhat, not as much as some people want. But the thing that shows what's really happening is two things. When the heart starts to shrink in size, meaning the muscle ain't working so hard anymore and doesn't need to get bigger, that's one thing. The second thing is when they take the 6-minute walk test. We have patients who, we have one guy recently who went from 25 to 31 on his ejection fraction. He was very disappointed, and his doctor gave him a 6-minute walk, and he went from 350 meters to 480 meters, and boy, did he get excited. And right. he's and now wonderful. Walking full time. Back to you, Paul. What's your next, what's your, any, what, you have one more point to go before we run out of time?
I do. The second method that our doctors use to bring stem cells into the heart is an endocardial intramyocardial application. Sounds like a lot of words. It's a second interventional delivery route using a specialized catheter that's placed across the aortic valve directly into the target area of the heart. What this allows us to do is offer stem cell treatment delivery in a very similar method of a surgical approach, however, being much less invasive at the same time. In essence, the stem cells are placed into the walls of the myocardium, and they're placed exactly where they're needed most, which is, again, where the infarcted tissue is. What we've seen as a result of this is patients that have gone for PET scans, that infarcted tissue has now become live, viable heart tissue, and that strengthens the entire heart muscle, enables it to run a lot more efficiently, enabling our patients to regain their health. And our physicians have been using these two methods primarily, one or the other or both, depending on the patient's anatomy and physiological conditions.
Well, thank you, Paul. Paul, we'd love to have you as a regular on the show. What do you think about coming in once a month and giving us some lessons on the next time on lung stem cells?
I would look forward to that. I would look forward to that invitation, and I look forward to letting all of your listeners know more about stem cells and the incredible benefits that they can provide.
Okay. As you can see, dear listeners, Paul has lived up to the introduction we gave you before we started this interview, and we'll be looking forward to him in September. Thanks again, Paul. Bye-bye.
Thank you, Don. Bye.
Going back to the term Paul uses, he uses the word infarcted. Infarcted means that the tissues were killed by a heart attack. The technical term is myocardial infarction or AMI, and that's what kills tissue. And when tissue is killed, you come up with a diagnosis of congestive heart failure. And when you come up with a diagnosis of congestive heart failure, your life expectancy goes down dramatically. The doctor won't tell you that, but that's what happens. For example, two 65-year-old twin brothers went in for an exam, and one was healthy. His life expectancy is 85. But the other twin brother goes in, and he's diagnosed with congestive heart failure because of this infarction, and his life expectancy goes down to under 75. And that's what we in the stem cell business try to help. But let's go on to the next subject now. Paul will be back in September. One of the misinformations ordinary people and doctors are subject to is what the people who spread propaganda about stem cells, they say it only lasts 4 months. And that was from a leading doctor at the University of Pennsylvania at a meeting of a society which we don't respect very much, but since it's owned and operated by pharma, they get every doctor they want to come there. He said that stem cells for the heart last only 3 or 4 months. His name was Gerhardt. Big shot at the University of Pennsylvania, and either he knows nothing and is pretending he does, or he's intentionally lying. So every week on this show, we are going to bring another patient, another English-speaking patient, who will make you understand that this kind of misinformation is to merely hold up the profits of pharma and let you keep using drugs which do nothing for you except treat symptoms and die young. We're going to talk to Joe and Judy now. They're from Texas, and let's bring them in and see if what they think of the fact that stem cells last only 4 months. Hi, Joe. Long time we haven't talked. Do you remember how your heart was acting when you before you first came to Bangkok?
Well, I was staying in bed 20 of 24 hours every day. I couldn't hardly get from my bed to my recliner and back. My heart doctor told me my EF was 10 to 12 and that my life expectancy was very short.
Okay. How did you find Theravita and Vessel? How did you find them?
Well, one of my golfing buddies heard it on the radio one afternoon.
I'll be gosh dang. Okay. So you and Judy took off for Bangkok. And Judy, do you remember when you first arrived in Bangkok? How did you feel about it?
Tired.
I'm sure. Were you nervous, or were you confident, or were you were you looking for answers, or what? How did you feel inside?
We didn't have any other options, so we just went thinking that it was going to work.
Okay. Joe, what's your recollection of the quality and caring of the doctors who treated you?
The doctors that I had, Kittipan and Permios, were both outstanding doctors.
Okay, just so the people know, there was a brand new special treatment devised by America's great stem cell heart stem cell researcher, Amit Patel, and he designed this therapy, which Dr. Kittipan of Thailand, who spent 30 years in Minneapolis becoming an incredibly accomplished thoracic surgeon, that means he operates on the heart, put together that with a robotic machine and had a very modern system that never hurt any patients in this mini surgery. Now, Joe, before the treatment, you said, and I quote, I will be the first one to get better, and I will get better immediately after the treatment. And I said, no way. Everybody stays in bed for a day or two. They're so they're still hurting from the surgery. And the next
That's
day
true.
after your surgery, I came in and I watched you walking around with your IV roller, walking around talking to other patients, and everybody else was groaning in bed. How do you account for that?
Positive mental attitude.
Okay. Judy, how did you find the doctors and the nurses and generally the people in Thailand as far as taking care of you and Joe?
They were good or better than any hospital or medical staff that we've got in the United States.
Okay. No surprise there. So now... the standard patient had to wait 7 to 9 days before they were allowed to come home. I understand you cut that time in half.
I did.
And you got home and...
5 days.
And 2 weeks later, I talked to, I forget, was you or Judy, but I was told that you were getting some vitality. There was no change in your heart symptoms, but you were getting some vitality that you hadn't had, and you weren't sleeping as much.
I played 18 holes of golf two weeks after I got home from Bangkok.
18 holes of golf. We got people who can't play 9 holes of mini golf that fast. And you were right. You were one of the fastest patients. Okay, let's skip forward to, let's say, 3 to 6 months down the road. What do you remember about your improvements?
Oh, I was able to walk 5 miles a day. I played golf 3 or 4 days a week. My energy level had gotten back probably 80%.
And how many hours were you sleeping a night?
8 hours.
Judy, Judy, what do you remember those first 6 months?
You know, anything that he wanted to do, he did. He went to Mexico with our son in February after he got back in December, and they went on a fishing trip. He just did whatever he wanted to do and wasn't tired when he did it.
Okay, we're now 6.5 years down the road. Joe?
Well, 6 years and 8 months, actually.
6 years, okay, but who's counting? Let's talk about Judy. How does Joe appear to you now compared to, let's say, the February he went fishing?
The same or maybe even better.
Now, let's make that clear for our patients and all of our listeners. Everybody gets different results, and most of them are unpredictable. Some people don't get any better. 1 out of 3 don't get any better. They don't get any harm, but they don't get any better. And as one of the world's leading stem cell doctor says frequently, you got nothing to lose but time and money. Because he knows how safe it is. But the average person goes 3 to 4 years. He improves for 1 year and then levels off and stays level for 3 to 4 years, at which time he starts drifting back to his old crippled style. Some of them come back for stem cells, and for some reason, which we only have theories for, those that come back, those who have succeeded on the first one and got their 2, 3, 4, 5 years out of it and come back for a second one, do much better in 2 out of 3. They do somewhere around 80% improvement for the second trip. However, Joe is one of the unusual 15% who keeps getting better. And I've been gathering statistics, I've been talking to patients, trying like mad to find out what the heck causes these people to go from good to better to even better. And we can't figure out the answer. So, Joe, you're not going to need any stem cell treatments anytime soon. You're still playing 18 holes 4 times a week?
Well, today it's 104 degrees here in Texas. The humidity is 74%, and I played 27 holes today. I play every 20, day.
27 holes. You're just making sure that you're going to get your money's worth out of these stem cells in case they stop working after 7 years. You got the maximum amount in. I'm proud of you, Joe.
Well, I figure every day the stem cells get cheaper.
That's right. On a per usage basis. Judy, any last-minute comments?
You know, I think maybe one of the things, because Joe never smokes, he just drinks very occasionally, that might, you know, maybe the condition of the person before they go, maybe not just their heart, but their physical situation might have something to do with it. I don't know. You all got the statistics.
Well, all we know is that we at the Repair Stem Cell Institute just bang the patient over the head after treatment to get on the right diet. We even pay an expert to give them the right diet. And it's quite a job. This guy works like mad to get the right diet per patient. Everybody's different. And he does a heck of a job. Dr. Brawley sometimes appears on the show with me. Thank you for your time. Thank you for your energy.
Remember when I came, I told you I would do better than anybody ever had or ever would?
Yeah, I sure do. Well, there's only one person ahead of you right now. And she's a lady in Southern California named Dee Coates. She is just completed year 8 and now into year 9. She's seeing great-grandchildren that were born that she never would have seen before the stem cells. So, for the sake of both of you, I hope you keep chasing her, and I hope you never catch up. I hope she just keeps running and running and running. Thank you for your time, Miss Judy, pretty Miss Judy, and Joe. It's always a pleasure. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Time for a commercial break. We'll be right back.
Have you been told repair stem cells are untested, unsafe, ineffective, and even detrimental? Not true. In fact, the safety and efficacy of repair stem cells have been proven in over 1,500 clinical trials in the United States and around the world. Repair stem cells are currently used by doctors worldwide to help people suffering from over 100 serious and so-called untreatable medical conditions. Learn the truth about stem cells with Don Margolis, chairman and founder of the Repair Stem Cell Institute, the world's only stem cell patient advocacy company, helping you and your loved ones to make educated choices and connect with the world's finest stem cell doctors on BBS Radio.
Well, we're back for our second and big news coming up, second and final last half hour of this hour show. Starting next week, Friday the 23rd, which is my 79th birthday, we will be doing a full 1 hour show and hoping to, and especially we're going to be inviting you to call in and ask us questions. So that starts next Friday. Right now, we're going to talk about another kind of stem cell called iPSC stem cells, which were dreamed up by two very excellent doctors in the year 2007. The gentleman who first isolated embryonic stem cells at the University of Wisconsin-Madison, James Thompson, and a Dr. Yamanaka from Japan, and the two of them, working separately, agreed to work on a stem cell, and it's not that tricky. It's called induced pluripotent stem cells, and what they do is they take the skin from the adult patient, taking adult skin cells, not stem cells, and driving them back step by step to the embryonic stage, so they become embryonic stem cells, but it doesn't cost an abortion. So it was a great idea, and everybody was excited about it, especially coming from two guys like this who really did know what they were doing regarding embryonic stem cells, and they didn't want to get any more baloney about the stem cells are bound to work and yeah, embryonic stem cells going to work, and getting into the abortion and religious battles. So they started going to work, and 2007, 2008, 2009, 2010, nothing seems to be marching along here. And then suddenly, even I, who was all for induced pluripotent stem cells, realized the fault, and the faults kept coming. Of course, you are eliminating, presumably, the fault of it would be rejected because it's not the patient's own DNA, and that was the power of this new type of stem cells. It would not be rejected like virtually every embryonic stem cell implant would be rejected by the immune system of the patient. The second thing was, however, they did such a good job of creating an embryonic stem cell that it cost a lot of money, a lot more than it cost to take stem cells from the bone marrow, stem cells from the patient's blood, stem cells, even stem cells from the adipose, from the tummy fat, where you need a mini lipo. That was a negative because they're expensive. Number two was the fact that no matter what you do, it's still an embryonic stem cell because they're trying to make an embryonic stem cell, and we all know what embryonic stem cells, all of us who've ever been in contact with me, they cause cancer. You won't find that information in your standard newspaper. They'll never mention it. You won't find it in your magazines. You'll rarely find it in even medical journals. So your doctor is at a great disadvantage. He doesn't know that all these different stem cells he's telling you to wait for cause cancer. They cause cancer, they're ultra expensive. And guess what? In the United States government's website for new clinical trials, mostly for drugs, but also for stem cells, how many stem cells are listed as embryonic stem cells or iPSC stem cells in the clinical trials? And we found none in embryonic and one in iPSC. Now, how many are active, completed, almost completed, or getting started stem cell clinical trials for repair stem cells, known as adult stem cells? How many are actually treating and finished or starting up with the official approval of the government website, which lists only well-planned, well-followed rules to list them as stem cells? And the answer is 2,700. So when these liars tell you that stem cells are, adult stem cells are unproven, and wait for embryonic stem cells, what they are saying to you is, this works better than any of our stupid drugs that never do anything, but we want to lie to you to tell you that they're unproven, because since the drug companies own and run the FDA says you're not proven. So now what you have is, instead of improving your life, they want you to die young and never get adult stem cells, and have your doctor tell you that they are unproven. And the poor son of a gun who's your doctor has no way, unless he digs deep, of disproving the lies they give him and he gives you. Adult stem cells, 2,700 clinical trials, ongoing or successfully completed, against nothing for embryonic stem cells, and against one tiny trial for some very uncommon disease for induced pluripotent stem cells. So that's why I tell you that iPSCs are even worse, than because there's one other thing that happens, and that is when you're taking these stem cells from the adult skin and working these cells back to the embryonic state, there's billions of transactions that happen. And if one out of a billion transaction has a slight error in it, what can be the result, and they have seen it, is that instead of having embryonic stem cells that copy the actual patient whose adult stem cell, your adult skin cells you're using, you get a monster, something that isn't his. And if you try to put that in the guy, he might wind up with two heads. They are monsters. And that's the thing, that embryonic stem cells don't have that, but induced pluripotent stem cells. So what is the drug industry going to do when people really don't know what embryonic, iPSC, induced pluripotent stem cells are? Well, they go in and they bribe the Nobel Committee to give Yamanaka a Nobel Prize for stem cells which can never help human patients. That's the truth. And he went to Sweden, got his big prize. Not that his work wasn't good, it just wasn't working. But that didn't stop the drug companies from bribing the Nobel contest judges. Instead of taking something that's already helping human beings and giving them the prize, they gave it to Yamanaka. Well, that blew up in the face of the drug industry. And he, and what happened was, again, Yamanaka's is innocent here, so we're not criticizing him. But the fixers, the pharma officials and their official publicity people found out that within 24 hours, it blew up in their face.
all of a sudden, the average guy who all he knows is he doesn't want to get embryonic stem cells and he'll get whatever else he is. He comes in looking for stem cells. What kind of stem cells you got? We got your own adult stem cells. Can I get treated? And the inquiries jumped up, and they panicked. And so there was Yamanaka, who went there to tell us what a wonderful thing it was to get Nobel Prize for this. And suddenly he turned into a whore, W-H-O-R-E, for pharma drugs. And he came, they put him into a press conference, which got very little coverage. But he said at the press conference that adult stem cells are unproven and anybody that does it shouldn't be allowed to do it, which is the pharma message. They want you to die rather than get something that can extend your life. And they got Yamanaka to tell everybody his stem cells are not adult stem cells and adult stem cells are dangerous and they're unproven, blah, blah, blah. Yes, Mr. Yamanaka, Dr. Yamanaka, stem cells, which are in 2,700 clinical trials, and some companies are spending those 2,700 clinical trials at the most elementary level are costing $500 million for people to run these various clinical trials. So some idiots are spending $500,000 with something that doesn't work. Yeah, right. Okay, next subject. We are we're now going to talk to the head doctor of the leading stem cell company in the world, that is, who uses adipose stem cells, that is, from the patient's own tummy fat. It requires mini lipo or micro lipo subjects. Now, when you're fat and you want to get a liposuction to remove your tummy fat, they take out lots and lots of that tummy fat. And they all have stem cells in them. So when Dr. Lopez Company, Regenerative Medicine Institute in Tijuana, Mexico, where our patients fly to San Diego and they take them right to the hospital in Tijuana, use only adipose stem cells from liposuction. And it's a technical area, and I want to get you educated and starting educated. So we're going to have Dr. Lopez here at least two times, once now, once in September. Here's our August interview with Dr. Jesus Lopez of the Regenerative Medicine Institute. Good afternoon, Dr. Perez. We're now interviewing Dr. Jesus Perez, the lead doctor at one of our 15 approved stem cell centers, and unique in that everything they treat with the patient's own adipose cells, which is usually from the tummy fat. Can you give us some background as to how this center got started, what it does? It has specialty doctors performing the stem cell treatments specialty by disease. Can you give us some feeling as to how this got started?
Yeah. Back in 2009, we got together and decided to form a multidisciplinary group using a variety of different specialists to do something which we thought wasn't widely available as far as stem cell treatments are concerned. Basically, what we decided to do was not only perform stem cell treatments, but to actually do research with our treatments in order to actually advance the science and make it more widely available to everybody. The idea being that we actually conduct a specific clinical trial per condition where we have verifiable and repeatable data which we can publish and share so that people stop seeing this as sort of a moneymaker as opposed to an actual acceptable treatment. So we got together in 2009 and we started designing specific protocols. We started with COPD and congestive heart failure. What we did is we got a specialist in each of the conditions that we treat, from a pulmonologist to an interventional cardiologist. Now we have an endovascular neurosurgeon for Parkinson's and Alzheimer's. We have internal medicine specialists and nephrologists for, kidney failure. We treat liver failure, a variety of different conditions, but all with the intention of gathering as much data as we can from each of our patients, and for which we do at least 12-month follow-up, and gather all this data together, analyze it separately per protocol for a specialist, and then publish that so other people can see how this works, and why it's a viable option for them. And if we find that something isn't a viable option, publish that as well and say why it doesn't work. So we started doing this, and we're trying to figure out exactly how we're going to go about it. And one of the first things that came up was, where are we going to get our stem cells? So the idea of using either donor cells or bone marrow cells went right out the window in the first meeting. The idea being that if you use donor cells, you're going to have to use immunosuppressive therapy for these patients. There is a good possibility that there will be some form of rejection or even graft versus host disease, and that's an added risk which we found unacceptable. We thought about using bone marrow, but it's very invasive and it doesn't yield that many cells. And the possibility of expanding a cell population and in doing so, potentially multiplying in an exponential fashion any and all genetic malformations we might find in a few cells gave us an added risk that, again, we weren't willing to put our patients through. So we started to do a little bit of research, and we found that adipose cells not only are hugely more abundant, they're also just as efficient, if not more efficient. In fact, there was an article just recently, I think last month, in the Journal for Translational Medicine, which shows, some researchers have shown, that adipose cells are not only more abundant, they're also more efficient, faster, and more active than bone marrow cells. So we started working with that, and we decided to design all of our protocols around the most non-invasive and most widely available source for stem cells, which happened to be the lower abdomen and the fat contained therein. We started doing that and have honed our process to the point where our cell yield used to be anywhere from 50 to maybe 75 million cells per patient to where we've gotten past 400 million in some patients.
Do you say some of them that you don't need to use on a patient the first trip in?
Say again?
Well, if you can get more than a quarter of a billion cells, you'll have some. You can have some left over if you so choose to store. Do you do that?
It's possible, but it's terribly inefficient. What we're trying to do here is just a single treatment and do a 12-month follow-up to see what the evolution of the patient is, regardless of how many cells we get, just in order to have kind of a baseline and evolution view. That way, we don't have the temptation to add a second treatment per patient, which would skew our results. It wouldn't give it the scientific validity that we're looking for. We could, in theory, freeze these cells. The problem is when you're cryopreserving these cells is that once you thaw them out, you're going to lose a large population of cells. And to be perfectly honest, why freeze cells when you can just perform another microliposuction? We're taking out about half a cup of fat, if that, per patient. So we can just do another lipo. It's much simpler, and you get more cells than you do through freezing.
Some people wonder how you do it, that you bring the patient in to the treatment room. You do what's called a mini lipo. A mini lipo is something that is done relatively quickly, always less than an hour. But what are the features of that mini lipo? Because most people have no idea what it means. It means that taking as opposed to doing a full liposuction program, you do a small one because you're not anxious to take a lot of fat out. Do you want to describe it for us, doctor?
Yeah, of course. Or you could call it either a mini lipo or a micro liposuction. Basically, what we do as opposed to a cosmetic liposuction, instead of taking a few liters of fat, we'll take 120 cc, which is less than half a cup, just barely. The basic idea is simple. We will have the patient evaluated in the OR by an anesthesiologist, and immediately after that, we'll administer local anesthetic to the skin so we can perform or make incisions, introduce a cannula with tumescent fluid, which is another form of anesthesia. It's also a form of a fluid expansion, which will make it easier to extract the fat. It will include lidocaine, a little bit of epinephrine to constrict the blood vessels so it minimizes bleeding, and a little bit of bicarbonate to offset the acidity of it. Makes it easy to extract the fat. We go over the surface fat as close to the skin as we can and do it as evenly as humanly possible so we don't leave any cosmetic blemishes or malformations that are visible. It's actually a rather quick and simple procedure, and while that's being done by the certified plastic surgeon, I'm actually in there next to him taking that fat and draining the fluid from it so we can get it as concentrated as humanly possible, and also keeping that fluid in a sterile container so that we can actually spin that down, get the solid portion of it, discard the liquid, add that to our fat and process it, which actually increases our cell yield. The whole thing takes approximately 40 minutes from start to finish after the initial local anesthesia.
Okay. How often do you get more than a quarter of a billion cells? What percentage of the time?
I'd say over 70% of the time, depending on the condition. When it's an eye condition, we actually require even less fat. So the chances of getting that high is very, very slim. I can tell you from the patients that we've done this year, we've been beneath 200 million cells twice.
Wow. Okay, and whether it's 200 million or 400 million, they all go into the patient on this first visit?
They do. The way they're administered depends on the condition. In some cases, we have to divide it up. Say, for example, congestive heart failure. We inject into the myocardium using a special catheter that's designed for us. It has a retractable syringe at the tip of it. So we actually go in through the femoral artery into the left ventricle of the heart and inject it from the inside. We'll take 70% of the cells that we've harvested and implant them directly into the heart muscle. The rest, the remaining 30%, will go into a IV bolus. The idea being that we'll implant them as fast and with as much concentration as we can to avoid something called the first-pass lung effect. It's a basic physiological principle that when you put something into a vein, the first organ that they're going to diffuse through, or anything, any substance is going to diffuse through, is the lungs, which is where the venous blood gets pumped from the heart for oxygenation. So it'll take up a certain percentage of whatever substance is in there. And it's been found that the percentage taken up is dependent on how concentrated your substance is and how fast it's infused. So for anything other than a lung condition, we'll do something as concentrated and as fast as we can to avoid the lungs taking it up. But for a condition like COPD, we'll do the exact opposite. We'll put all the cells in 1,000 cc and infuse them over 2 hours, as opposed to maybe 3 cc over 2 seconds. Same amount of cells, just incredibly diluted and incredibly slow, so that anywhere from 85 to 95% of the cells will stay in the lungs.
Because it depends
on the condition.
The lungs are the most powerful organ when it comes to grabbing stem cells out of the system.
They are very good at it, yes.
Yes. That's why we were in our Theravita work years ago, we were shocked how many diabetics got better when we were treating the heart. And, you know, we understand how they leaked out of the heart because we were using a lot of cells, but how did the pancreas grab them? And people would call us back and say, hey, my endocrinologist says my insulin's been cut in half. How did that happen? And they were being treated for the heart. Anyway, let's get into what you treat, and let's start with which lung conditions you treat besides COPD.
Well, COPD is actually pretty broad in definition. It involves emphysema, chronic bronchitis, and things like that. We don't treat pulmonary fibrosis, so we stick basically to emphysema and, like I said, chronic bronchitis. But we are currently working on a protocol for cystic fibrosis. It's still in the works. We haven't treated any patients yet. We haven't finished it, but it should be ready within the next couple of months.
Well, if you get one that works better than 50% of the time, you could be leading the world, because what we see is the cystic fibrosis treatments work in the 45 to 50% range.
Yeah.
And it's if you can get something that will do 60%, you'll have quite a protocol there. How about asthma? Some people say that asthma is also COPD. I don't know if that's true or not, but...
Severe asthma is very similar to COPD. Unfortunately, it doesn't meet the diagnosis criteria. But we have had patients that have had asthma and have been treated for something else. And as a pleasant byproduct, their asthma has been slightly improved.
Okay. Thank you, Dr. Jesus. We will be back in a week or two to discuss with you some of the various diseases that you have decided is what you want to treat because you're getting good results. Will that be all right with you?
Yeah, that'd be perfect. It's been a pleasure.
Okay. Dr. Jesus Perez from the Regenerative Medicine Institute, we thank you for your time and for teaching us things that most people don't know about adipose treatments. Bye-bye for now.
Thank you.
Hi, we're back here in the studio, and for our last subject for the day, we are going to talk. We're going to talk about our next show, which is Friday the 23rd, and it will be our first two-hour show. And for the first time, we're going to give out our call-in number, and people can call in and ask any questions they want on the subject of stem cells. That will be, again, a week from this Friday, or if you're in the Eastern Hemisphere, a week from this Saturday. And we hope you get a chance to listen. If you are in the Eastern Hemisphere, and this show is going on in the evening in the USA, of course, it puts you in the middle of the night, and we don't expect you to get up at 4 in the morning to listen to this show. However, you're going to get an email shortly, or you got an email yesterday that said how to get into the program if you want to listen live, and also how to get into it when you want to listen to it recorded the next day. And we'll give you all those instructions so that if you live in the Eastern Hemisphere, you don't have to get up in the middle of the night and listen to it. If you live down under, yes, you can. You can come in on Saturday morning, 10 o'clock in Sydney. Saturday morning would be live. 12 o'clock in New Zealand would be live. But the rest of it, you got to get up too early, so you just wait for the recording, which is, well, you'll get a complete instructions how to work. Thank you for your listening, and we're going to sign off now and say bye-bye until Friday the 23rd, first 2 hour broadcast. Bye-bye.
If you or a loved one suffers from a chronic disease, I'm here to tell you that you don't have to suffer, as the medical establishment may suggest. You definitely can have a better quality of life and prolong your years without chemicals, scalpels, radiation, anesthesia, and pills, and more pills. I'm Don Margolis, and I started the Repair Stem Cell Institute to make sure you have all the information you need about how this amazing therapy can help you. Visit our website, repairstemcells.org, and learn how stem cells can help improve your life. If you feel they are the best treatment path for you, simply fill out our no-obligation treatment request form and let us personally guide you through the process of finding the best stem cell doctors and centers in the world. At the Repair Stem Cell Institute, we are proud to say that we have already improved the lives of hundreds of patients. Contact us now and take an important first step toward improving your own life or the life of a loved one.